kick back and get raw with us.
From the latest hip-hop beefs, to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back to another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. I hope you guys all had a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving break. I know a lot of you guys are still feeling the Thanksgiving break because you guys turned up so much. I know I was definitely one of them. I can tell you, though, that I'm happy to report, since the last episode we talked about clapbacks, Thanksgiving clapbacks specifically, I am happy to report that I did not need to use any Thanksgiving clapbacks this year because I made the wise decision to go celebrate Thanksgiving with my favorite cousins, Cynthia and Orville, in West Bubble, Long Island. So shout out to Cynthia and Orville, because if you guys were following my social media, you know that Thanksgiving 2018 was lit. I mean, karaoke was lit. They had an actual bar with a bartender for Thanksgiving. I've never seen anything like it, literally. So Thanksgiving, I will probably go to their house for Thanksgiving next year to avoid the invasive questions from family members who were not invited to lit Thanksgiving 2018. But that was my Thanksgiving. I will say, though, although I was not a victim of the Thanksgiving clapback with black families this year, I did observe one of my cousins, who I will not reveal his name on air, but I was actually there to witness him getting cornered about the fact that he does not have any children. He's not married. And so he really actually got cornered this year for Thanksgiving. So although I felt bad for him, I was happy that I was not the one that was on the chopping block this year. But either way, moving along with our show, you guys know that for those of you who have not been listening, we always have a system here. We have our Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week. We have our big up of the week, which is an opportunity that I take to highlight local and national people who are doing great things in society. And also we have our womp womp of the week, because whenever there's a high, there's always a low. But on today's show, the meat of the show, we're going to be talking about colorism in the black community particularly. So I have a very special guest, Laura Jean-Jacques, who is going to be with me today to talk about colorism. I think it's a topic that we do not talk about enough, and it affects the black community especially. It affects us. And in 2018, you would think that we wouldn't really have to talk about these types of things, but it's still real. And so she's going to come on the show a little later today to talk about colorism. And I specifically picked her because I consider myself dark skin and Laura's light skin. So it's always good to have that balance in the conversation, so that the conversation really has real meaning, because you're getting perspectives from people on two ends of the stick. But like I said, you know what time it is. It is time for our Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
I'm fleek.
Can you use it in a sentence?
I've been with fleek.
Is it lit?
It's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So guys, our Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week this week is the word bust down. Now, I'm not sure if you guys have ever heard this term before. I certainly have never heard this term before, but either way, here we go. So the term bust down refers to a woman who sleeps around, usually with guys of the same crew. The example given is, April is a bust down because she slept with all of the guys at the party. Now, I know this week's Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week is a little bit, I don't know, it's lackluster if you ask me. However, I will say that this term I think is pretty interesting because although I've never heard anybody refer to a woman who sleeps around as a bust down, I find it interesting that we keep creating labels for women who sleep around. And yet, nowhere in this definition does it talk about a man who is, it doesn't seem like it's interchangeable. It seems like it's strictly for females. So I do find it interesting that in 2018, we're still labeling people. And we're still creating new terms to talk about women who are sleeping around. So this term was submitted by somebody from Chicago. So I don't know if in Chicago this is, I don't know, it was from Nita from Chi-Town. I'm not sure if this is what they're calling hoes in Chicago now. But I think that it's just another example. I mean, I don't know. I feel like this double standard will never leave society. It will never leave us. And I think that at some point there needs to be a real conversation as to why that is the case. I mean, I personally believe that people should be able to live their lives however they want. As long as it's not harming anyone, if they want to sleep around with the crew, let them sleep around with the crew. So I feel like these labels that we're imposing on people still, like we're still creating new names, new ways to call a girl a hoe. I feel like that's a bit much. But that was the word of the week, the phrase of the week. For those of you who are looking for classier ways to address women as hoes or tramps, there you go. Either way. So this week, our big up of the weeks are internet sensations Pop Vasquez and Kaya Baby. So like I said earlier in the show, every week we have a big up of the week, and that's a time that we can highlight people who are doing great things in our community. So Pop Vasquez, which his name goes P-O-P underscore Vasquez, common spelling, and Kaya Baby 718. I found out about them about a year ago. So one of my friends had reposted a video of Pop Vasquez and his daughter, Kaya Baby 718. I think Kaya is about 4 or 5 years old, and Pop Vasquez, he's a grown man. Either way, he posts these videos, probably I think pretty much daily, of his interactions with his daughter. And some of them may be staged, but it's just the cutest thing ever just to see him interact with his little girl. But the reason that they're big ups of the week is that these two, father and daughter duo, are giving back in the community in a major way. And like I said, I consider them internet sensations. A lot of people, they do have a lot of followers on Instagram. But I thought that it would be a great opportunity to highlight them, because a lot of times I'll highlight either celebrities or people that I actually know. I don't know these two individuals, but I've been following them on social media for about a year now. So basically, a little bit before Thanksgiving, Pop Vasquez, so Pop, and his daughter Kaya went out. They're from the Bronx, or at least he's from the Bronx, and they were giving out turkeys. So they were, you know, doing acts of community service for the holiday, giving out turkeys. And so they took to Instagram to talk about their experience. And so in this conversation, they were saying that, you know, they went out, they gave turkeys, but somebody came up to them and was like, well, I'm a vegan. And so obviously the turkey situation wasn't working out for him. The second guy that walked up to them was like, well, I'm homeless, so I don't have anywhere to cook a turkey. And so based on the feedback that they got, they decided that they're going to give back in a different way. And so on December 15th, they're going to actually have a holiday pop-up in the city. And I believe I posted the flyer on my social media at According to RP today. But they're actually going to do this pop-up holiday party where they're going to provide food and they're going to provide drink. And I believe the cost is like $10. But all of the proceeds that they collect from this event are going to be donated to the Gun Hill Community Center in the Bronx. And so I thought that this was just such a beautiful thing, because not only you know, are they giving back to the community? But we have like a I think she's, I'm going to say four or five-ish, but a five-year-old little girl who is already involved in great acts of community service. And the reason I love the duo so much is because there's so many things you can take from them. One, you see a black man who's from the hood, like he's like he has no qualms about it. He's representing Gun Hill Houses all day, every day. But you have a black man who society doesn't expect to really be there to take care of kids, let alone be an active figure with his daughter. You know, highlighting their his relationship with his daughter on social media on a daily basis, and you see that the dynamic is genuine. So I feel like he is an example to young men out there that listen, like, you don't have to be a deadbeat. There are good fathers out there. And also the fact that he's instilling in his young daughter at such a young age the importance of compassion and giving back to the community. And so I feel like I had to, when I saw, you know, their Instagram post about the Thanksgiving and how they learned their lesson, but that, you know, they didn't let it discourage them. They came back to basically give back in another way. I thought that that was actually very, very beautiful of them to do. So that is the big up of the week. So moving forward to our womp womp of the week, because with every high, there is a low. And you know that if you've been following me on social media, that the low this week is Blac Chyna. So I'm not sure how many of you all have been keeping up with the Blac Chyna debacle and her skin bleaching cream situation. But it's actually gotten much more, I guess, press and much more feedback than I guess, I don't know, if she ever expected it to get. I think that when she embarked on this entrepreneurial journey, she thought that it was just going to be another way for her to secure her bag. But unfortunately, it was not. So for those of you who don't really know much about Blac Chyna or who have no idea who I'm talking about, Blac Chyna is the baby mama of Rob Kardashian. Now, if you don't know what that means, Wikipedia is here to help. For those of you who know me, as much as I love Urban Dictionary, I also love Wikipedia because Wikipedia really sheds some light on what's going on. Now, Blac Chyna, whose government name is actually Angela Renee White, she's an American model and she's an entrepreneur. Oh, and welcome everybody. Well, not welcome everybody. Christ. Welcome, Laura. Everybody, welcome Laura to the show. So basically, I'm hoping everything's going okay here. You know, whenever we go live, there's always some sort of situation. Yes, but I was actually in the middle of telling everybody who Blac Chyna is. So I know when I spoke to you, you were just like, I don't even know who Blac Chyna is.
I know who she is, but I could care less
for who she is. And so for the most part, I don't care about her, but I care about the Tom Fuller and the debauchery. Mm-hmm. But before we go into that, people are hearing your voice. They're like, who is this Laura girl? Laura, please explain to everyone, who are you?
Oh, man. I try not to talk about myself a lot.
Oh, well, it's important to do so. She's very amazing, so you should tell everybody who you are.
I'm an entrepreneur first.
Okay.
And I have a lot of different businesses, but where you can find me is at Brooklyn Commons, where you're hosting.
Yes, where we are currently.
Right now. So I'm the events director here. So if you guys are in need of space, collaboration, partnership, definitely reach out to me.
All right, great. Is that all you want people to know about you, Laura?
For now, yes.
Okay, fine. We're going to have to do a separate show then because Laura is an amazing, amazing individual. And I feel like she's being way too modest, but it's okay. Either way, so I was telling everybody who Blac Chyna was, Blac Chyna is. Blac Chyna, I explained, is the baby mama. Some people might know her as the baby mama of Rob Kardashian because the Kardashian name, you know, rings bells. But I was going into, so Wikipedia is always, you know, defining people's lives. I don't know who submits this information to Wikipedia, but it's some of the shadiest things ever, and you will hear. So Blac Chyna, I gave her government name, Angela Renee Wright, and apparently she's an American model and entrepreneur, but Wikipedia decided to be a little shady today. So their description of her, when you first go on, goes on to say that China began stripping in Maryland to pay for college tuition. She started college, but resumed stripping, never completed college because she was too tired to attend class. Whoa. So this kind of gives a little background of who we're dealing here. I mean, for me at least.
I'm on Wikipedia right now.
Yeah, listen, Wikipedia is shady as hell, okay? That's true. I didn't even look to see who the author was. All I saw was like, who gave this definition?
And guess what was written on her name? Black tea.
Oh!
Wow.
So yeah, so apparently that's who Blac Chyna is. But the reason why she's the womp womp of the week, and the reason why we're talking about her, is because of her recent partnership with this company called White Tenacious, which is a skin lightening, skin bleaching, company. And so she's now the face of White Tenacious. So this past weekend, actually, Blac Chyna decided, I guess her and her counterparts or her crew found it, I guess, necessary to launch their skin lightening cream in Lagos, Nigeria. And so this actually happens because I followed up and she actually did go to Nigeria and they did launch the product. So ever since this announcement was made, people were kind of going crazy. Black Twitter was on fire and they were just like, is she crazy? Like, who? First of all, like, who's her PR? You know, who's her publicist? Like, who's advising her? Because as a Black woman, and these are some of the comments that I saw, like, as a Black woman, you know, peddling skin bleaching, skin lightening creams to the Black community, and then deciding that, hey, we're not going to launch it in the U.S., let's go launch it in Africa, they found that that was kind of inappropriate, I guess. And so, you know, honestly, I'm not sure because I've never seen any posts about her ever going to Nigeria in the past. But I could be wrong because I don't, you know.
It's a PR stunt, one, but it does a lot of damage. And it's an already damaged continent.
And I think that that's kind of where it's at, right? So I believe that it was a PR stunt because this got a lot of press. It got a lot of press.
Yeah.
But
way lighter in her picture too.
Well, that's the thing. So Blac Chyna had some comments, right? When people were like coming at her in her Twitter, people were coming at her in all sorts of forms, basically saying like, you know, why would you do such a thing? Like, are you dumb? Are you stupid? But she retorted by saying that, well, you know, this is not a skin bleaching cream, it's a skin lightening cream for those who suffer from hyperpigmentation, as she claims to suffer from hyperpigmentation. Now, I don't know if I would have been so mad if maybe the marketing reflected something along those lines. Like,
I want to see you with the skin problem that you say you supposedly have.
What? Well, I guess that's the other thing,
show
too, though.
Show before and after, like, if that is really what it is.
And I haven't seen. I mean, I haven't trolled the internet enough to see if there is a before and after, but I'm sure if there was, it would have been posted up already. But she's claiming that that's basically the reason that, you know, she's supporting this company. But I think the other thing with the company, why Tenacious? I feel like there's just so many things wrong about it. And I think that this recent stunt from Blac Chyna, whether it be purposeful or just made out of ignorance, I think it's opened up or reopened up this age-old topic of colorism, especially in the Black community. And so I had stated earlier in the show, before you popped up in here, I was like, well, you know, I'm dark-skinned and Laura is light-skinned. And so I felt like it would be a more balanced conversation because you don't want to have, like, okay, two dark-skinned girls talking about the issue, right? Because it might be a little slightly one-sided. Or light-skinned girls talking about the issue without having somebody who's of darker hue. But I can say, and you'll talk about, I'll ask you about your experience growing up. But for me, as being a dark skinned girl, my mom is also, like, you know, brown skin. My grandmother was very dark skinned. And so it was always this thing, like when I was younger, I was very light. I'm not sure if it's just, you know, I guess I was just light. And then over the years, I just became a little darker. But my mom would always, like, harp on the times that I was so beautiful and light. Like, she was, it was always, like, she was so beautiful. She was so light, like, gleaming. Like, she had all this hair. And it was just such, like, a point of pride.
That's the same obsession as we have with long hair.
Well, it is, yeah. Yeah. So the obsession is there, too, with the long hair. But the thing is that with the, you know, I can add extensions, right?
Yeah, exactly.
With the skin, unless I'm really trying to damage my skin, you know, there's really not much I can really do. I can pile on makeup. I can use skin bleaching creams. But it is what it is. But I find that even though I was born here in the United States and my parents are from Haiti, that they brought over this idea of, listen, light is right,
yeah,
and dark is, you know, it's more peasant-ish or whatever it is, right? And so growing up, I didn't have a complex, at least I didn't. I know many people who did.
Why do you think you didn't have a complex?
I didn't have a complex. Although my mom would make these comments, my mom wasn't light skinned.
Yeah.
So I
just saw people that look like.
Yeah. So for me, it didn't really create the complex so much because my mom was. If my mom was light skinned, maybe I would have had a complex because I would look at her and say, "Oh, I wish I could be like her."
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't grow up with the complex. But one of my younger cousins actually did because when she was younger, she would put white baby powder on her face because she wanted to be white. That's another story. But. So for me growing up, though, I didn't personally have the complex, but I experienced the colorism when people would say, oh, you're very pretty for a dark-skinned girl, you know, or make comments like that. Or they would talk about, or the guys that I would hang out with would talk about, oh, the light-skinned girls that they're after, like girls who are light-skinned with long hair. So as I got older, like I started to experience it. It didn't affect me as much, but I experienced it. I was on the other side of the stick. I was like, you know, the victim, but not really. But I always wanted to know, like, as a light-skinned person.
A light-skinned perspective?
What is your... I mean, because there is a perspective. I mean, did
no,
you...
No, of course.
You know, like, how did you see this whole colorism thing growing up?
Like, I feel like I've personally experienced it, right? And then have seen it. So, one of the things that always happens is, like, when you get people that say, oh, you look like someone that I know, so I'm an identical twin. And... there's been several incidents where we have someone that said, oh, you look like someone that I know. So we were walking into a space, this was a while ago, and this guy was like, oh, I just walked into this woman that looks just like your mother. We're like, really? How does she look like? So he described her to look just like me and my sister, right? I was like, actually, you're a little off because my mother's dark-skinned. My mother is a beautiful dark-skinned woman, deep brown eyes, curly, wavy, kinky hair. My maternal grandmother is dark skin. And so I have sisters. My oldest sister is dark skin. She's like my mom's twin. So I have like very close friends, sister friends, my cousin who's like, we were raised as siblings, who are dark skin. So for me, I've never had an issue with complexion. My husband is dark skin. Like, literally, at the other end of the spectrum.
We have to go into that, though.
Yeah, so we're going to go into that. But what I'm saying is, I've never looked at a complexion and said, oh, this person is, you know, inferior and I'm superior because I'm light-skinned. But have I experienced colorism towards people? Have I seen colorism towards people? Yes. And my father was what they would call a mulatto, right? So my father looked Ecuadorian, looked Hispanic. I mean, we pass... as Hispanic all the time. And so my father was very judgmental. And I was just confused. Like, how are you, you know, how do you not like my boyfriend at the time who's not my husband because he's dark? And how did you marry a woman that was dark-skinned? And if we came out, the four of us that you had with my mother, if we came out dark-skinned, would you love us less?
Mm-hmm.
So those things always came up. But I do have a personal story with skin bleaching cream.
Mm.
So, at the time, I had a friend, a best friend of 15 years, and in her country, they used it to, like, you know, lighten up their elbows and get rid of acne. I was in high school, so I still have skin problems, but my acne was worse. I was very stressed out in high school, like most teenagers.
Yeah.
I think my stress level was a lot higher. So, my skin, I had, like, a really bad breakout one time, and she was just like, oh, I use this brand. And I'm not going to see the brand because we're on radio. And she's just like, I use this brand. You should try to, like, ease up your acne a little bit. and I didn't realize that it was sebum bleaching cream, and it had the word African on it. So me being 15 years old and just wanting my skin to relax a little bit, calm down, and trying all these things, and I didn't eat bad as a teenager, so a lot of it was hormone-based, right? And I put it, and my skin started clearing up. But as my skin started clearing up, and at this point, I still don't know this sebum bleaching cream. All I know is my skin is clearing up, I'm getting compliments, and I was like, oh, you know, great, my mother didn't even know what I was using. So, it starts clearing up, and I start getting patches of, I'm light skin, so I was getting lighter color patches, like, what do they call it, vitiligo?
Yeah.
So I started developing that, and I was just like, what is going on? And then I read the back, and I was like, oh my God, this is skin bleaching. But to my friend, it was just like, this is how we grew up in my household. You know, you're busy putting your elbow on the table all the time, it darkens up, or your knees, or, and I didn't realize that's what she was using. And so it was crazy. And when I found out, I was just like, oh, I can't do this to myself. No way. And I just stopped. But that's how innocently, too, I feel that skin lightening, bleaching products are promoted within the Caribbean Black communities. It's very subtle. Because they're so used to it. I mean, I can go into a hair braiding place.
Mm-hmm. And you'll see it for sale.
It's right down the counter for like $7.99, for $5.99. Like, it's so easily accessible, and it's so dangerous. It's like relaxer.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
And it's funny you say that, because I don't know why, it was maybe around the same era.
Yeah.
I, too, had an experience with a skin bleaching cream. And it's funny because a lot of the Haitian shops sell these soaps, and they sell these creams. Yeah. And I remember, and I don't even remember how or why. I think it was like, for me, they were like, oh, this is a face moisturizer.
Yeah, it's the way they promote it.
It was a face moisturizer. Because there was like a time period where the black soap and all these things had entered into my household. And I don't know if I remember my mom using it as, to be very honest. I think she must have, because how would I have gotten it? But I do remember there was times where I felt like my skin, I think, was lightening up. But then it was crazy, because that's where the compliment again came in. Oh my gosh, look at my little grimel. Look at my little light skin girl. And so it was really interesting how even at a young age, a lot of women would say that a lot of Caribbean women, African women.
It was just there.
It was something in the house that you used.
Exactly.
And it wasn't, like, you weren't putting it all over your body, but it was like, you know, this is like a face cream.
Yeah.
And that was that. But
it's the same, I feel like I've referenced the relaxer thing. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I had a relaxer from the age of 10 to 23, and I don't have coarse hair. I mean, I have kinky, curly hair, but the way it was introduced to me was, hey, you guys are 10, you guys have big, curly hair, you know, are you guys not on access or permission? But even then, it wasn't used like, oh, you need to, like, soften your hair. It was just like, oh, let's make it more manageable.
Mm-hmm.
Not realizing that the relaxer had formaldehyde and, you know,
all these harmful
things, and why was I getting headaches, and why was it burning my scalp, and they're not putting too much together, they're not strong enough to relax your hair, but not realizing, like, the damage that you were doing to your health.
Well, the thing with the relaxer, if it didn't burn, it wasn't working. Like, that's what I was always told. Like, if it's not, when it starts burning. Yeah. And I would be like, it's burning. They're like, you got to give it five more minutes. Because it's going to be a wasted effort. So, yeah, I would probably say that is right. Like, it's the way that it was marketed to us as children, I would say.
Yeah, I think it's different now in 2018. I think you still have a lot of countries where they don't have access to media the way we do in America. So I do try to, like, look outside of where we're at here in the U.S. and say, okay, if I were to go to certain parts of Africa, they're not in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are still back in the 80s. Sorry. In the 80s and the 90s. And these things are still being sold because that's their norm. But I think it's the responsibility of the government, first of all, because you have a lot of countries like the U.K. and Canada that these things go through a vetting process before it's the population. So I think a lot of it comes from the government taking responsibility for why these products are hitting the market like that, at that rate, and why is it still being promoted. You can control media, because it's not like a lot of them are democratic countries. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot more control there. I'm not saying, like, you know, take away freedom of speech and stuff like that, but I think that they could step in and say, okay, environmentally, too, it's not safe.
They don't care, though.
They don't care.
That's the thing.
Because it's wrong.
It's, you know, especially when it comes to the black and the brown, they really don't. They really don't care. I mean, I don't. I think that, you know, with everything that they're dealing with, whatever, this is low on their totem pole. You know, if black people want to continue to feel like, you know, white is right and they want to be closer to us, then why not allow them to do so? I don't think that our health are really concerns for them, and I think that. So on my Instagram post, I had I think the one that I posted today, I had asked whether or not, you know, white people are still perpetrating this idea of colorism, because colorism has a history. In some countries, it predates, you know, colonizers. We're talking about, you know, especially in Asia, where, you know, being light-skinned till this day, or of lighter complexion, fair complexion, is still a big thing because it was more of a class issue. You know, you had the workers,
soft,
yeah, the
white,
people who were
gentle,
working,
pure.
Yeah, the people who were working in the fields, mm-hmm. you knew that they were mere workers because they were getting tanned from the sun. Mm-hmm. But if you weren't tan, it was like, oh, well, you must work inside. You must have a prestigious position or whatever. Mm-hmm. Now, if we're going to bring it back to the black community, it goes back to slavery days where lighter-skinned people were given a little more privilege than dark-skinned people. And that's where you have the whole, you know, house slave versus field slave and whatnot. But I think what the unfortunate thing was for our community is that, you know, after slavery ended, it would have been great for black people everywhere of all shades to kind of come together and, like, you know, we've overcome.
We were still enslaved up until the 60s, if you really look at mm-hmm. it, from physical change,
the mental slavery,
and bondage, no, and, like, systematic slavery / racism was in full effect up until the 80s.
But how do you feel like that pitted... So my thing is, when we were under the control of the slave masters, right, who were just like, listen, light skin, you're going to come inside and we're going to leave the darkies out there, right? Or I'm going to give you privileges over your dark counterparts, right? But when slavery ended, and even though there was systematic racism, but within the communities, the black people continued to segregate themselves. So you had the whole paper brown test. If you're not lighter than the paper brown bag.
You know, after post-slavery, after everything went down, there was an actual outcast of light-skinned people, of mm-hmm. mulattoes in Louisiana. Did you ever hear about that? It was like a small town that they formed. That's why there's such a Creole, big mm-hmm. Creole population in Louisiana, because they were outcasted, because they didn't fit the house slave complexion. And they didn't fit the dark skin complexion. They were, like, in between. Mm-hmm. And so they were casted off. So I think if you look at earlier signs of how we even segregated ourselves from each other, mm-hmm. that started from that. Mm-hmm. I don't have the exact names for those, that town that they formed. So I think some of it was just, like, you're trying to find yourself post-slavery when even the house slave sheet, they were forced to be in there. Mm-hmm. You know, they were born out of forceful acts. Out of violation too, and same thing as the field slave. So I think those things, we couldn't have control either way. We didn't have a choice. But I think post-slavery, you're still trying to make way of things, and then we're separating, because that is what we knew, separation. Mm-hmm. You didn't feel attached to another slave. They systematically were separating us through slavery. So I think a lot of it is so far back. And then you have things like, why do we still have skin bleaching? Why? And it's not even like you were talking about your mother fixating on your light. And it's like, I get fixated on all the time because I'm light skinned. I mean, when I was single, even as a married person, you have people stare at you all the time. Oh my God, you're so pretty. Oh, you're so light skinned. Where are you from? What are you mixed with? I'm black. I'm Asian American. You know, but you get so many people that, you know, or like the look at your hair. I remember, like, my hair is kinky curly, right? And I even had that comment where it was just like, I was in a hotel and the woman was cleaning the bathroom, and she was just like, ooh, your hair's kind of kinky. lucky for your complexion. I'm like, what do you mean by that? And she's like, oh, you know, because you're lighter, I was expecting your hair to be softer or, like, wavy or straight. I'm like, that's a very ignorant statement to make. And it's just like we kind of go at each other that way. Or you have some guys that will share and tell, I don't date, like, dark-skinned girls. I only date light-skinned girls. And I have some guys say, you know, I don't date light-skinned girls because they're not real blacks. You know, I think from a light-skinned perspective, I've gone through more discrimination in regards to my complexion from my own people.
I mean, I'm not going to argue with that because I wanted to get to that part of the conversation that because there's been, I think because there's so much, I don't know, if it's animosity from a lot, and I'm just going to say from a lot of dark-skinned women because I heard the comments, so I'm not just coming, you know, pulling this out of my ass, but, you know, just from dark-skinned women because we've either always been, like, pushed aside or because, you know, the rap lyrics don't really, you know, glorify us. They always talk about light-skinned girls. You know, bad light-skinned girls or whatever, I think we've developed a little bit of an animosity toward light-skinned women. So I feel like I can understand why there are some light-skinned women who do feel like they're actually, in a sense, being victimized by the whole colorism thing.
I can speak for myself, or I can say I haven't really been a victim to the way that I, to the extent that I've seen people. That's my personal experience. But I can tell you certain incidents that have happened, and I'm like, why? Why are we going through all this? Why am I less of a woman because I'm lighter in complexion? Why am I less of a black woman? And anybody that may be like over is as black as they get. You know? So it's just like no one should have to prove themselves or justify themselves because somebody is judging off of your complexion.
Well, I've definitely heard that with, and it's funny because I was reading a Huffington Post article earlier today that did mention, that did talk about light skin women and some of their, like, the issues that they face, because you do hear that, you know, when you're dark skin, you're considered more authentic, you're considered more legitimate in terms of, I guess, the black experience, the black culture, the black everything. Like, that's Africa, right? And so when you are of lighter skin complexion, there's always that, well, what do you mix with? That's usually the first question, right? Like, you can't be black because you're light skin. And so you're right. It does kind of take away, because I've seen some of the, like, the fiercest freedom fighters, the fiercest Pan-Africanists, the fiercest pro-black people that I've met have been light, bright individuals. But some people wonder, is the reason that they're going so hard to prove that they are, in fact, black? Is that why you find a lot of them, like, some of the, like, the light, bright girl women that I know, some of them are very, like, they're total Pan-Africanist. Like, they're wearing, you know, the garb, they're wearing all, like, they're more African than anybody you'll ever meet. And so sometimes I wonder, are they doing that also, one, because they might like it, they identify with it, but because they're trying to prove their Africanness?
I can only speak for myself, right?
Yes.
So, for me, I know that I'm passionate about a lot of things because I'm passionate about them. And my complexion doesn't come into play with that. It comes from me seeing something that I dislike, and me seeing a person being mistreated or a situation that's just not right, and me knowing that it's my responsibility to stand up for that person or that thing or whatever I feel passionate about. Some people might have ulterior motives, but I don't know that. I can't say, oh, Angela Davis became, you know, part of the Black Panther because she wanted to prove that she was a true black woman or that she picked her hair out. I can only say that I know what she... At least I can say that she's fought for some real stuff. And she went through some real things that whether she was light-skinned, dark-skinned, the system didn't see it that way. And I think that's what, although people, as a light-skinned person, your own people will say, oh, what do you mix with? A white man sees me as a black woman. The minute you have a little light tint to your complexion, they don't see you as white. And I think that's what we need to start looking at, too. The outside world doesn't see me anything other than either somebody that's not white.
And I think that is important because in today's post, again, you know, a lot of people will, you know, blame the color, like it's the colonizers. Of course, there's a history there. We know that. We understand that. But in 2018, I find that it's more of us the black people, the black and brown people that are perpetuating these ideas of colorism. And it's not, I mean, not to say that the white person might not have his hand in it, but at the end of the day, like you said, when a white person sees you, they're not thinking, for the most part, what is Laura mixed with, or that Laura is not black. They're thinking she's, it's funny, I was watching an episode of Return to Amish. I watch these interesting shows. But on that show, so there was a young man that was adopted into, you know, by an Amish person. And that community calls him black. He's like, I'm Bulgarian. I'm not black. But because his skin was dark, the community automatically categorized him as black. And I find that people, like, I guess those of us in our own black community who's, like, all wrapped up in this, I don't think we really sit back and think, and what really matters? Like, whose opinion actually matters as to who you are?
And even outside world's opinion doesn't matter, but if you want some perspective, go ask a white man, who is this light, is this light-skinned woman black? Is she white? Is she mixed? And most of them will say she's black. They look at a dark-skinned woman and there's some dark women, they're mixed, they're half white, half black, and they look like a pure black woman, you know what I mean? So it's just us that we're judging each other and we're carrying on these campaigns, and it has to start with us, but also the people that have the stakeholders, government, all these people do have, you know, money, and they have power, and they can promote whatever they want, and sometimes their word is stronger than little old me or you on the radio show talking about we need to stop this. I think the celebrities have more power and should be doing better with deconstructing these systems that were built for us to hate ourselves. It's like 2018 and all our people getting shot inside of the 7-Eleven trying to buy milk for their 2-year-old. Like, come on. Like,
there are greater issues than this.
That's like, why are we still fixating on complexion when we step outside and we could die for absolutely no reason whatsoever? Men, women, children, a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old girl? Like, come on. And so I think it has to be responsibility for our people too that hold enough power in terms of money, influence, whatever that translates, to say, okay, we need to start promoting better images of ourselves. And there's enough, I think, substantial or, like, black media companies that are coming out. Sean King is rebuilding the North Star and to try to change the image of the black person. And I think if more of these celebrities would start strategically partnering with platforms like that, I think they can probably even, I know there was a huge campaign like a year or two ago about ending the lightning cream and the bleaching crisis in Africa from African celebrities. I remember seeing that 2 or 3 years ago. So I think it is possible, but it has to be a much bigger effort too. And then it just has to be us to stop hating each other.
Well, I think that's really where it's at. I mean, I know a lot of people do place blame on pop culture because you have, I think I had posted up a little, Lil Wayne's notorious for light-skinned girls, long-haired, red bone. That's his thing. And then there are a lot of rappers out there, a lot of...
But your baby mama's brown.
Well,
it's
we have several. Which one are you talking about?
The one that I like,
Toya. Yeah, but, she was the exception.
Yeah, she's gorgeous, but it's just like you also have to look at his lyrics and say somebody wrote that. Like, you know, go look at the credits. Who wrote his lyrics?
But I believe, even though somebody wrote his lyrics, though, I do believe. I mean, Toya, Toya is dark skinned, but I mean, Lauren London. Like, I mean, Lil Wayne is known for his love of red bone and not necessarily dealing with the dark skinned girl. But I think there's a lot, especially in the rap culture and the music culture, there's just a lot of those messages that are being sent out. It might not be, we hate dark skinned girls, we only want light skinned girls, but just the music, you know, everything's about a light skinned girl, a light skinned thick girl, a long haired light skinned girl. Like, it seems to be. But there are people, though, who are saying that, you know what, they're just entertainers. It's not
They get paid.
But they're saying it's not up to them to, like if they want to talk about light-skinned girls, that's their preference. It's not, you know.
Everybody has their preference. They get paid a lot of money to do what they do. they have bills to pay, and it's their judgment call. So it's us also as a public to say, am I going to really buy into this? Like, do you not have your own thoughts, your own brain, your own mind to process these things and say, you know, it's like these rappers talking about shooting and killing, and they've never shot and killed a person in their life.
Tekashi 6ix9ine.
Yeah.
Please look him after me. Because he got goons.
I'm going to give you her address for that. But my thing is, like, you can buy into those things and you can choose to not buy into those things. At the end of the day, we're still responsible to change the narrative of our people on different levels. You know, so my thing is, the way I change the narrative for me and how I start is, I don't judge people off their complexion. I'm not going to bring up your complexion. I'm not going to ask you what ethnicity you are or where you come from. If you want to divulge that in conversation or whatever, fine. But I don't judge people off of that. That's my responsibility, to never ask somebody that. But, you know, when I'm talking to people, I hear, like, accent, and they may say, where are you from? You know, that kind of stuff. But I don't. That's not something I've learned that over time. I think we all have to take responsibility. You know, for a younger person, that's acceptable. And it is hard in the era that we're in, especially social media, who's still, you know, giving this romanticized, fetishized image of light skin versus dark skin. Even the whole Asian mix and all that stuff that they...
Well, everybody's exotic now.
Yeah.
Everyone's exotic. So you don't just have to be light-skinned now. You have to also be exotic.
I mean, do you remember the Time... I think it was Time Magazine, like, maybe 2-3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, like, around when Obama... not 4 years ago, but when Obama was president, and it was, like, a Time cover, and it was, like, this is how the future will look like. And it was a bunch of, like, interracial mixed kids. And I'm like, where's the dark skin mixed person? Where's, you know, like, it was just, like, this, like, spectrum of, like, light brown.
You know what? I recall that now, because I think they predict that, I don't know, in the year of whatever, that our society will be more of a mixed society.
Yeah, but then the images that was on was just pure fair-skinned people, and I'm like, that's not true.
Well, that's what they're trying to say. They're trying to say that. I don't remember what year they said, if it was, it wasn't, you know, the year 2050 or whatever it was. They predicted that our generation is going to look more like these fair-skinned, light-skinned women and men. So I guess they're trying to say that the black skin tone is going to at some point be eradicated because more and more people are mixing, which is interesting.
Do you remember American Top Model?
Yes.
And I know that I told you I don't listen to celebrity news, but I was in fashion at some point, but there was one of the models, like, she looked white. She looked like a white woman. And then they were asking her back. They took a trip to Africa. Do you remember that?
I'd have to know her name.
They went to Nelson Mandela's, like, prison cell.
This might have been when I decided to stop following,
like,
Tyler.
Yeah. This was, like, a couple of seasons in.
Okay.
And my sister and I, we used to watch that show religiously. And they took a trip to his cell, and they were doing the whole entire, like, walk and tour. The tour guide was explaining. And one of the girls, one of the dark-skinned girls, sat in the cell and started crying. But she didn't know the history of Nelson Mandela or anything. When they were asking her, she didn't even know what she was crying. It was, like, almost through the cameras. She didn't know her history, which also a lot of us don't do. We don't know our real history, right? She sat in the cell, she was crying, and then the girl that looks white started crying. And so the dark skin girl was like, okay, we got a call.
Hold on. Is this working? Can you hear me? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
Who is this? Mila?
Mila calling from Jersey.
Hi, Mila calling from Jersey.
Hi, Mila. How are you?
I'm good. I have a question.
Go ahead.
So I think this is a very important conversation that we are having about colorism. I'm wondering, you know, in listening to the conversation about how some darker skinned people make lighter skinned people feel like they're not black enough. I'm originally from Haiti, where colorism is so prominent, where light skinned people actually treat those who are darker skinned with a sense of inferiority. I'm just wondering, do you think that there's a responsibility on the side of light-skinned people to not perpetuate, you know, their sense of superiority as well?
I think it's all of our responsibility to just not do that to each other. I think a darker-skinned person might say something different as well. I can't speak for a dark-skinned person. What do you think, Rita?
Well, I think I understand where Marley's coming from. I think especially because I'm familiar with this Haitian community she speaks of. Because I'm part of it. But I think that there's a lot of instances where the lighter skinned people, the mulattoes, or those who believe that they might be a mulatto but really aren't because they're only maybe half a shade lighter than me. I think that a lot of them sometimes use, because it's more of a class thing in Haiti, right? Like, you have a little color, so it's a class. Not even, like, really, you know, it's nothing more than just a class.
I think we also, like, Myla. I think it also has to do with us light-skinned people, like, calling it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to, like, let me give you a prime example of how I experienced that. My husband, as I said earlier, is dark-skinned. And I introduced him to my parents by accident. It wasn't supposed to happen at all, actually. So he came to pick me up, and my dad happened to be in the house. And like I said, my mother's also dark-skinned, and so is my maternal grandmother. And so it's like my uncles, aunts, everybody. And when my dad met him, my dad started speaking Creole. He was like, oh, he's dark, he's this. Not realizing that my husband is also Haitian, and I was extremist. And I was like, I called my father out. I was just like, he's a human being, he's a great person, and don't do that again. And I mean, that caused me, I mean, me and my father didn't have a great relationship, but that was enough for me to say enough, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you have to have enough of us, especially if you're a light-skinned person in Haiti, and Haiti's modernizing a little bit, and kind of like breaking a lot of old way traditions. And I think if that is the direction in which we're going as a people in the U.S. and in Haiti, we need to also start stepping up to the plate saying, stop it. Like, come
mm-hmm.
on. Like, enough.
Yeah. I definitely agree with you in that I think for the light-skinned people, they need to call each other out. Because I do remember one time I was in college and we were having a pseudo-topic, like pseudo-convo of, like, colorism. It wasn't really a top. We weren't really talking about it, but it somehow snuck in. And there was a very Haitian girl, very, very, you know, beautiful in her own right, whether she was dark or light, she was, you know, she's a beautiful woman. Very, very long hair, though. You could tell that her family must have been from, like, the mulatto group in Haiti. You could just tell. We had green eyes, very straight hair, not permed, nothing like that. And so the entire time they're talking about light-skinned women, she's, like, playing with her hair. She's touching her face. And she had made some comment to, like, a dark-skinned girl. Like, I think that was the first time I might have heard somebody else refer to another one. Like, oh, you're very beautiful for a dark-skinned girl. But it was just to see, like, how it's like she was emboldened by the fact that she was light-skinned and that she was, like, you know, the topic of the day. Like, she was, like, she knew that she was it. Right, because she has this long hair, she has this light skin, and I do find that a lot of women who are, you know, fairly light skinned do, not everyone obviously, because I have a lot of family members, a lot of friends who are light skinned who don't, there's no discussion about their skin color, but you will find those who will play it up in a sense, in a way to almost kind of like put down the dark skinned girl, and I think that that's why there seems to still be this, like, animosity because we're not talking about it. We're not having a conversation to be like, how do you guys feel?
I think it goes back to bad behavior, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if a kid is behaving badly, you could either beat their ass, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry for cursing.
No, it's okay.
You could beat that kid's ass, right? But in 2018, we're trying to do things a little bit different, right?
Well, that's because the government will
lock
you up.
Yeah, right? But what I'm saying is you can have somebody become aware of their bad behavior. And you can explain to someone why you're calling it out. Now, does that person well, that person actually listened to what you're saying. That's up to that person, and it's how you deliver it too. But, you know, you need to call out bad behavior. You need to explain why. If you don't have an explanation to a person that grew up in a family that's been that way, and their grandparents and generations in, that is normal behavior for them.
That is true.
And so how do you teach someone who's been displaying and behaving badly their entire life and grew up in a household where that was normal, just like cursing or anything else, you bring it to their attention hoping that they can change that if you have a good enough explanation, right? So for us is, why should we stop judging each other based off of complexion?
How was that response for you, Myla? Did Myla leave? Did we lose Myla? Okay.
I think it's a very satisfactory answer. I mean, obviously we are, you know, addressing a very complex issue that has so many layers. But I definitely share in what you guys indicated. We just have to do better as a community, and we have to do better as individuals.
Yes. Yeah, no, I agree. I think the key is... Oh, I know, Myla, you said you had to go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in.
No problem. Thank you. You're welcome. Doing a good job.
Thank you.
All right.
But yeah, so basically, like, with what Marley said, I mean, Myla said, I feel like there's a lot of situations where there's a lot of animosity. And I think that... Yeah, and because there's no real conversation about it, people just continue to be like, well, light-skinned girls always think that they're this, they think that they're that, or dark-skinned girls always have an issue with light-skinned girls. Like, there's, I feel like, you know, as silly as it is, it really isn't, because it's dictating our lives. It's dictating, like, how we move in spots. Like, if we go to a club, we go to a space where there's men, women are, oh, well, because she's light-skinned, that's the only reason, like, he went and spoke to her. I don't have a chance here because of all these light-skinned girls. Like, a lot of times, like, we do internalize it, and we don't realize, like, how much of this takes over. Like, you wouldn't expect some people to make those types of comments, but it's actually, like, deep-seated when they're presented in certain situations that this comes out.
I mean, like, I have six sisters. We're all gorgeous. You know, they were all different complexions. Mm-hmm. And my mom did a really good job with us growing up for us to be confident in ourselves. Did our father kind of try to break that down? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that was just his way, right? But if we talk about, I think we haven't talked about even like self-love and self-esteem. That plays a huge role in that. Mm-hmm. Like, I have, like, back to my six sisters. I mean, we're like all... 2 to 8 years apart. Mm-hmm. So 2, 4, you know, like, so we're all around the same age, and we go out like girlfriends, mm-hmm. and we'll go into a club, or not a club, we haven't gone to clubs in a long time.
Well, lounges,
buying lounges,
spots.
chill spots, and, you know, you'll walk through the door, and there's, these women are gorgeous too, but they fixate on what they're assuming is another definition of beautiful, mm-hmm. which might be more beautiful than them, or wherever that's coming from, where a guy approaches you, I mean, you can hear them snickering. And this is not all the time, but we did have one incident where, like, the whole energy in the room shifted, mm-hmm. and it wasn't negative. It was more like you did just have six women just walk into the space, all in their own mm-hmm. right of who they are as people. And we were like, oh, all of us girls in here could have been hanging out, but mm-hmm. immediately felt some of the women tense up.
It's deep-rooted. It's definitely deep-rooted.
It's a self-esteem thing. It's a self-love thing. And
we have another caller. And this will be the last one.
Too.
I know, but the time is flying when you're having fun. Caller, reveal yourself. Caller? Okay. I think we're having issues with the caller. Hello? I don't know what happened. The caller will call back. I can give myself a couple extra minutes. But yeah, I think a lot of that, again, comes from, it's deep-rooted. You know, as much as we want to, like, you know, bury history, we can't. It's our parents.
And the only way that we have to do is address it.
And have real conversations about it.
And then get rid of it. You know, however long that takes, but it has to be a whole collective doing that.
Yeah.
You can't just have a few people that believe. There has to be a much bigger effort to say, not only is it like destroying, you know, your self-image, but like you're literally physically changing your body chemistry. Like,
yeah.
When people bleach, that burns through layers of skin.
Have you seen Vibes Cartel lately?
Vibes who?
I mean, honestly speaking, when I saw the picture of him recently, I was just like, who is this man? But it just goes to show that psychology has a lot to do with it as well,
yeah.
too. You know what I mean? Like
why? Did he ever explain why he did it? Was it vitiligo too?
I don't believe that it was vitiligo. I honestly believe that he might have, you know, always had a complex and maybe
yeah.
felt like he was able to address the complex at this time. I mean, this whole colorism thing, obviously we have to do another episode on this, where we do address maybe the different things that we can do, the community can do to uplift, you know, our sisters, light skin, dark skin. I know that the media, in terms of, you know, movies and stuff, they're doing a better job now. I mean, you know, you have Viola Davis, you have all of these really dark-skinned women who, beautiful women, but you're seeing more and more of them enter into the media. Because for the longest time, a lot of the roles
you
saw...
Still getting typecasted. Same for the...
They are, but at least we're seeing them, though.
We're
seeing them.
Yeah.
Because honestly, for little dark-skinned girls, when you see black people, you saw light with really, really long hair or big hair, it was just like, okay, so there's nobody like us who have little afros or whatever. But now you are seeing, even though these women are still being typecasted, they're still out there. So it just goes to show that there is progress. And hopefully they will break out of these, you know, these, I guess, pigeonholes that they're in. But at least for now, I'm happy that I can see a woman like Viola Davis, like, killing it in the game. And we're seeing Lupita killing it in the game and being her natural self out there. So I feel like we're...
That's what I'm saying. It goes back to them being confident.
But we don't know, but that's the thing. We see them now out there, right? But we still
Lupita
don't know what their struggle.
She has talked about how much she hated her complexion
yeah,
growing up.
But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, it's you know, it's taken them a lot of time to get to where they are now. And some of them, even though they're out here, it doesn't mean that it's still not a complex for them.
Yeah.
Because Hollywood is still making it an issue for them, even though they're allowing them to sit at the table now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that definitely we should, you know, we should definitely have another conversation about this, but maybe more of like a round table, because I feel like, although, you know, we are on different spectrums, but because we know each other, we're very, you know, like, this is what it is. We're not, you know, our experiences are our experiences, but we're not necessarily speaking for everybody.
I think we can come in and say, okay, we're black women who have experienced some sort of colorism
mm-hmm.
in our life, but I still think, one, it's still an individual issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because each person, that person that's still bleaching their skin in 2018 in Brooklyn, New York, living in East Flatbush,
mm-hmm.
has a reason why they're doing it. I mean, like, I was at, what's that place? The Terminal Market the other
mm-hmm.
day. And I mean, these women were African, religious African women. I'm like, this woman has straight up, like, I can see the outline of the original complexion
mm-hmm.
and why, living in Brooklyn in 2018, are you still bleaching your skin? But that's her perspective. She will tell me why she did it, you know? So for me, I feel like, yes, we should be having roundtable discussions. That's still an individual problem. And then
I don't know if I agree that it's strictly individual, though. And now I see that we're running into time now. The debate's getting real. But because I feel like, though I might be the one bleaching my skin, I feel like it's because of the societal pressures. I feel like it's because of media. A lot of people will say it's because of these, you know, for you, you're a strong woman. You could be like, well, this rapper talking about, you know, bleaching doesn't mean anything for me.
No,
I understand. But a lot of these
yeah.
people are just like, you know, when you're in a society where dark skin is not what's in,
yeah.
you know, it makes you feel some type of way. Like, you know, for me, I was lucky that I never felt like I needed to go and become Little Kim and, you know, change my entire look and whatever. But for a lot of women, you know, it's just like...
So this might be not a little off topic, but this might be on a different tangent. But
mm-hmm.
for me, I think some of it, like, for me, I don't need, I appreciate a man showing me affection and love, that kind of stuff, but I've never needed to be reassured by a man of, like, my physical self, right? My physical appearance. And that's also because of my mother saying, you don't need a man to say that you're beautiful. You should already know that. But that's how she raised us. You have some women, right, if we're just going to talk about from the female, black female perspective, because there's men out there that go through that. There's females that didn't have somebody telling them that. Like you said, your mother always went back to your light skin things, right? But it also plays with women who are in heterosexual relationships, right? The men, if they depend on a man to reassure them of their physical beauty, of their value, men would need to play a bigger role in making black women feel themselves. Even though I'm not in agreement with somebody filling that void for you, but there are enough women out there that they do look for that in their partners. And your partner should be making you feel secure and safe in who you are and enhancing you. But for a woman that does look for that in their partner, if we're going to go to that, black men need to do a better job of making women feel valued.
Why
and not, and like, and going back to the Lil Wayne lyrics, like, you know, he is rapping about red bone girls and red hair and this and that, but if we're going to go to another source of problem, it is how men are, you know, portraying black women and, you know,
and how, so, I guess, as women, too, like, I mean, I'm guilty of it because I love trap music, but a lot of the things that they're, you know, trapping about are things that are, you know, I need a detox, but a lot of the things that they're talking about are, you know, contradictory to what, you know, I stand for as a woman. So, but that's where I feel like at the end of the day, even with women, like, you know, who might be relying on a man to kind of define them, but I feel like society,
like,
in general.
It's society, and black men do need to do a better job to portray their black women in a better light.
Well, they do. They need to put more dark-skinned girls in the videos.
That too. That
videos
too.
Are not even a thing anymore, but...
See, a beautiful black man media, Belly, right? The movie
Belly
just hit 20 years, and what's her name? Who was the actress? Keisha?
Keisha.
I was DMX girl. She was gorgeous. Gorgeous dark skin girl. That's the first time that I ever watched a movie with a beautiful black woman showcased. Even though she was sexualized, right? But you were just like, where did she come from? And then I remember Kenya Moore all the time, despite me not really liking her personality. But she was somebody that I could remember in terms of darker complexion on TV all the time. But they were also typecasted.
But yeah, but that's the thing. The fact that I can actually sit there and be like, oh yeah, Kenya one time, and then this girl one time, that's where the problem comes in.
Yeah.
But we are running out of time. These, you know, it's always, for some reason, always like the build-up always takes a while. And then now I know why people have like two-hour radio shows, because the first hour is just like... First hour is just like, and then it's like, all right, let's get into the meat.
Yeah.
But definitely, thank you so much for joining us today. This is a very interesting convo, and I think that we are going to have a part two, and I think we'll have a part two with more focused points, because I do, in some of the comments that I got on Instagram about, like, you know, in anticipation for today's show, a lot of my dark-skinned sisters, you know, it's like, you know, we need to talk about how, you know, dark people are portrayed in the community, and how black people, like, even dark people have issues with other dark people. It's like, you know, it's really interesting, like, how this is. And it's like, it's keeping us from winning. Like, it's keeping us from really, like, coming together as a community. And we're already dealing, like you said, with racism and people getting shot for all sorts of reasons, whatever the case is. But for the complexion of your skin to be a dividing factor, it's ridiculous. And so, like, this all came about because of this whole Black China situation, who's out here perpetrating the lie that, you know...
It goes back to what I was saying. I was like, you're already light-skinned.
Is she already light-skinned? I don't understand. But that I think that's where the fraud part is, right? Some people are like, this is a fraud.
You
like,
cannot put that on your skin to get to that complexion, so stop.
And did I tell you it costs $250? So it's like... So not only are you selling it to the, you know, you're marketing it to the black people, you know black people will use their EBT card to go get that. Yeah, no, they will get it. They will get it because it's diamond studded or Swarovski, whatever crystal, and it's being peddled by Black China. So it's like people are using their rent money to go buy this thing, right? So because it has to be the biggest thing. But either way, I mean, there's a lot of issues. There's a lot of like,
it's so much cheaper.
Yeah, it's a lot to really unpack in an hour.
We have a lot to unpack as a black people, period.
Yeah, I mean, there's so topic many, after topic. Yeah. But I think we have to start, I think we have to stop, and that's me too, saying we just have so much to deal with, and actually start dealing with things one by one. Like, actually stop saying we need to figure it out, and actually start to. And if that's having little conversations like this, that to some may be like, ah, okay, it's not that big of a deal, but at least it's starting the conversation. It's getting people of different skin tones in the same room.
So I had a conversation like years ago. We were talking about the topic of why, like, the separation between European Americans and, like, African Americans, and, like, why there was so much division and stuff like that. I forgot, we got to another part of the conversation. The person was like, it's because we're not all really dealing with the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, during the civil rights movements in America and slavery across the world, we all were, like, literally part of the same experience every single day. You woke up, you were either in the field or you were in the house.
Mm-hmm.
During the civil rights movement, you woke up and you feared for your life every single day. If there was a mandate put out right now against anybody of black race, and you every day you walked out, not just the whole killings from
mm-hmm.
cops, if there was something put out in the public and passed as law saying every black person within this spectrum of a complexion will get hung the minute they leave their house and the minute they're sighted, trust me, everybody would come together to fight this colorism issue. But because we're not all literally, and that's why I go back to the whole individual experience,
mm-hmm.
not every black person is going through colorism or is acknowledging.
Yeah, I think that's the key word. They're not acknowledging it.
Or they literally, like you said, they don't feel like it's an issue. But if it was on a broader spectrum
mm-hmm.
where we had to deal with that every single day, trust me, we'll come together. So it should be where every single day we are talking about it and we're
mm-hmm.
mentioning it. It's in your face.
Yeah.
You can't ignore it because we're all experiencing it on some level.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that it's wrong.
So I think it's calling out the instances of when it occurs,
yes.
That would be the issue.
And always calling it wrong. We're not calling it right. You know, it's just like, this is wrong because this deconstructs who we are as a people and what we fought for and what our ancestors have fought for to get us where we're at. And some of us are still dying in other continents
mm-hmm.
because of that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, especially in the third world countries. I mean, the colorism is real there because it is. They're not dealing with white supremacy. They're dealing with classism. And the color is what causes them, you know, to feel that they can, you know, create this caste system. And, I mean, all on and on.
Yeah,
but,
like
I know, and I'm getting text messages here. So, thank you so much, Laura, for joining us on this very important conversation that will be continued. But again, more structured, more segmented, now that we've kind of opened it up a little bit. But, guys, thank you for tuning in and bearing with me. You guys always know there's something going on here when we're going live. Hopefully the person who called in will, comment on Instagram. But I definitely want to hear what you have to say. But, again, everybody, thank you again for tuning in to According to RP on WJMS Radio. And I'll talk to you next week.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Thursday.
I can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's all online.
WJMSradio.com.
Download the new app.
Live 365. Listen to the show anywhere.
Anytime.
Download it now.